Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me for the Janice Dean Podcast. Today's Dean's List recipient is Ken Reedy. He works with YAI, the Young Adult Institute, as the Regional Support Supervisor for the Hudson Valley. Ken has been working with adults with disabilities for over three decades. During the pandemic, people with disabilities were many times overlooked. We, of course, were upset about our kids and the elderly, but what about those who live with disabilities and whose families care for them? Ken is someone who has been trying to raise his voice about the harms that were caused during the pandemic and the terrible circumstances that were amplified. It was not only tragic, but it presented situations that were impossible for families. Ken joined me on the podcast to highlight his advocacy and talk about the projects he's working on to try and change things for the better, creating new experiences for people living with disabilities. Needless to say, Ken is a force for good, and I am grateful to know him. Please welcome Ken Reedy on the Janice Dean Podcast. Ken Reedy, I want to read what you emailed our producers here, first of all. So let's start off with that. It says, I've worked with adults with disabilities for almost 30 years, and over that time, the field as a whole has been underfunded, resulting in poor wages and an incredible lack of resources. The lack of appropriate funds has led to poor caretaking, pervasive abuse, and for those of us who care, a continual feeling of pushing an 8-ton boulder uphill. In 2020, in my building alone, we lost 14 people during the pandemic, 12 people with disabilities and two staff. The story was lost, not unusual for our profession, and underreported. I'm so sorry about that.
Thank you. I appreciate the fact that you read that, and that at least right now, even though it happened in 2020, that we're shedding a light on it. But yeah, sadly, our field, people with disabilities as a whole, don't get enough media attention. It kind of becomes that like political hockey puck that if you're going to cut somewhere, cut the funds to programs that service people with disabilities. And it's sad, and it's time for it to stop.
Absolutely. I mean, this hits home for me because obviously over the last 3 years, I've been advocating for what happened in nursing homes. And then some of those articles, when they talk about nursing homes, at the very bottom, they'll also say this happened in homes with disabled people. I don't like to use the word disabled either, because I just feel like it kind of pushes us into, I want everyone to be able, and some people have challenges. Let's just say that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the people with disabilities is the term that we use, so yeah. It's okay.
Okay.
Disability advocates, people with disabilities who have advocated are cool with that term.
Okay, I'm glad you told me that.
And so, I mean, it's not to say it won't change at some point, but that is totally acceptable. And you're right, like if there's going to be a report about people with disabilities, it's going to be way at the bottom,
yes. You
know, and... there's stuff. I mean, I think we're going to go through like a real emotional kind of roller coaster here today, because this is sad stuff, but I want to talk about some of the great stuff that happens.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of great things that go on when you're working with people with disabilities, but, there has to be some sort of, change. There has to be leaders that will start to take it seriously. There has to be media attention like this and more interviews like this with people in the field and honestly people with disabilities to get their voices heard. Lost when the pandemic hit, The what we call a DAHAB, Dehabilitation Center. So a lot of people with disabilities will go there. It's kind of like a school-like setting for adults with disabilities. At our Tarrytown DAHAB, we have people who have the level of ability that, you know, we can get into it later, but I help run an entrepreneurialism program for people with disabilities. We have a woman who runs her own Etsy store. So we have that level, but we also have people who function at the level of an infant, who are adults, but, you know, need assistance with toileting, with toothbrushing. With, and we have wonderful staff that do that, that help these humans with these tasks. When the pandemic hit, the DAHABs closed. And everyone was forced into, if they lived with families, back home, most of which back into group homes. And similar to your experience in advocating for people in nursing homes, people tested positive for COVID and were put right back into their residence. And the story was lost. It was scary for staff. It was really scary for staff. I mean, at that point, people were dying. You know, you were seeing the images on the news of body bags. And as workers, we're just being told, get to work. Get in the group homes, get to work.
Was it the same type of executive order that nursing homes had, that you had to take these residents without testing?
I believe so. We were told, I mean, they'd go to the hospital, they'd test positive, but then they would wind up coming back. And you know, the sad thing was for everybody involved, for staff and for people with disabilities, you know, the staff are worrying. You know, what's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to my family? What can I bring home?
Did you have a choice to go into work?
I mean, we could quit. You know, there was that. But
you're
not really.
Passionate people. You've picked this profession for a reason.
Yes, and there are a lot of good people. There are a lot of good people in this field.
Right.
And the good people stayed and fought the good fight. But it wasn't like, it wasn't scary. You know, there were many nights where, you know, I came home just sobbing because I didn't know what I could be bringing home. You know, I made it a point like not to see my parents because, you know, I didn't know what could be on. You know, the information was like, we didn't know at the time. And, you know, that was what the staff were dealing with. And on top of that, on the other side, you have someone with an intellectual disability who is really not understanding what's going on.
Yes.
And we're trying to force them essentially to stay in their bedroom. You know, and they want to come out. Not, it's their home. You know, they want to come out. They want to interact with their friends. They're not going to a DAHAB. They're stuck in their home now 24/7. And now if you tested positive, you're stuck in your home, in your bedroom.
Yes.
24/7. They're not understanding that. I should say that, like, a lot of them didn't understand
of
that.
Of course.
And it was just a really stressful time. And I understand that it's the nature of the beast on some levels. But the fact that the field is so underfunded, the salaries that people were making to do this is not enough to support a family. And the media just did not shine the spotlight on it at all. Was very disheartening. And it really, it's added to the level of burnout within the field that I don't know if we've actually totally gotten out of it now. We're on the verge of 2024, so we're talking 4 years. Of a workforce that's pretty burned out.
Mm-hmm. And did this kind of, you know, with the nursing home issue, I found that not a silver lining at all, because it's not, but it did shine a light on the already not so good issues that were happening inside of nursing homes. And, you know, I don't mean to say that that's your facility, but just the fact of underfunded, not enough reason to get into this business. So I want to know why you've been in this industry for 30 years. What drove you to it?
I needed a job.
You're honest.
No, I'll be honest. Yeah. I, you know, and that's part of the interesting thing about working in the field. No one dreamed of being in this field. It wasn't something that when you were 7 years old, you're like, oh, I hope I'm working with intellectually disabled adults, you know?
Yes.
But, you know, when you wind up in it, I mean, when the right people wind up in
it. Right. That's what we're talking about.
It winds up being, it becomes kind of a calling. Mm-hmm. And there's, there have been moments over the years that have just, you know, moments where I've been super burned out, and I'll be honest, I wasn't the best staff person. Yeah. But there are moments, and as of now, really, where I've recognized that this is a calling. I'm not going to get rich working in this field. If I can continue to do things like this to expose the ills of the field, right, and hopefully prompt government, federal, local, state to recognize the problems. But it's really become a calling. You know, there've been some, and I have tons of stories, so I'll give some happy ones and some sad ones. But I'll give you one that's a sad one, and it hit me hard as far as where this field is and what it does and what it does to families.
Yes.
And there was a woman that I worked with who she was lower functioning. She was one of the ones kind of talked about needed assistance with just about everything. But she was a fighter. Her name was Susan, and she was blind as well. And she had some pretty significant behavioral issues. Over the course of when I worked with her, we were able to resolve it, which coming out of, like, I had no training, but I was able to figure it out working with our amazing behavior intervention specialist. Her name is Inetta. And myself and Inetta put together a plan. We were consistent. And over the years, she led a pretty peaceful life. Sadly, down the road a piece, she wound up getting cancer and she passed away. And I was heartbroken. I mean, it was really tough for me to handle her passing away, because she taught me a lot about humanity, doing good. And I will never forget being at her funeral. Now I'm getting emotional. But her mom looked at me and said, "It's a really sad day." And then she said, "I'm glad she went before me, because I don't know who would have looked after her." Mm. And that's a mom.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I mean, for parents, it's got to hit home, but a mom to say, "I'm glad she went first." Like, that's not the natural order thing. No parent wants that.
Right.
But the state of the field.
Honest.
Yes. That she just didn't know. When you look at the stats of abuse, it's pervasive. It's a rough go. And, you know, when you look at things in our field and you look at underfunding and you look at poor wages, you know, to me, it's like three things come out of that. You either hire the wrong people.
Yeah.
Because you need people. Mm-hmm. You need the staff ratios you need to. So you just bring in people. You don't interview them maybe as harshly as you should.
Yes.
The second factor is you keep the people that probably shouldn't be in the field anymore.
Yes.
And the third, and this is the worst, you burn out the good ones.
Yeah.
The good ones get super burned out. And, you know, when Susan's mom said that to me, it broke me. It really did. But over the years, and when you look at, like, blessings in disguise and the pandemic, you know, we lost all those people in our building. I kind of started advocating for a memorial service. I'm like, we couldn't have wakes, we couldn't have funerals,
right,
we couldn't have, so I'm like, we need something. People need something to process this.
Yes.
And as I advocated, no one was really doing anything.
No.
So I just decided I'm just going to do it. Mm. I'm going to put together the memorial service. And if I can look at anything that was a blessing in disguise during the pandemic, I've really taken the attitude now of, I'm just going to do it.
And if
it ruffles some feathers, then, you know, maybe those are the feathers that need ruffling.
Yes.
And just keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, you know? I hear you. It is scary, but I feel like sometimes it is a calling to do this kind of work, to bang on doors, to make phone calls to lawmakers, to put yourself, you know, in front of Albany. And it's really tough. And like you said, it's such a David and Goliath battle. Don't go anywhere. We'll have more of the Janice Dean podcast right after this.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
So tell me what you want to see in a perfect world. What would you want to happen?
Well, a perfect world, at the very least, livable wages.
Yes.
Because I think that there are people in the field we need to get out.
Yes.
I mean, that the people that, you know, need to be fired because they're just incompetent.
Uh-huh.
We need to bring better people into the field. And the people that are there, like I said, we need to compensate them. I don't know anyone in the field who doesn't work at least a second job, if not a third and a fourth. And the hours that they put in are astronomical just to make ends meet. And, you know, and these are people, I mean, we have people that work in our field that are on public assistance. And that's, I mean, they're working 8 hours a day. Like, that's in America, caring for another human being, mm-hmm. another human being that needs it. For you not to be able to live on that salary is disgusting. It's like, that shouldn't happen in America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I worked with someone when we had to change our insurance package, and it's funding through the agency, and the insurance package was going to be, when we changed health insurance, going to be more out of pocket. And a mom, her name is Madeline, and she looked at me, and she, in all seriousness, she's like, I don't know how I'm going to put food on the table. Mm. But she's working, like she's, yeah. and she's very good. She is very good at what she does. She helps run an art studio that I put together at Tarrytown. She is excellent with the people, the individuals. But that's the reality, that she literally was like, I don't know how I'm going to feed my kids.
Yeah.
And she's working 8 hours a day. You know, she's got a full-time job. It, mm-hmm. It's not someone who, you know, I hate to say it, and I'm not being disparaging, but someone who's taking advantage of the system. Like, she's got a job.
Right.
She's got an important job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all too real. But as we move on, I doing things like this is most important, whether it's me or other people or you. And again, I cannot thank you enough for helping to shine the spotlight, but it's attention. It really becomes like that squeaky wheel is going to get the oil. So where can we get the attention? Even like right now, and I'm really hoping it finds an audience, but we're filming a documentary. I helped create a multimedia curriculum at Tarrytown, and, there was a dream of one of the individuals to make a horror movie. He wanted to make a horror movie. So we decided, all right, we'll make a horror movie. And we came up with an idea. Well, he came up with the idea of making a zombie movie.
Okay.
His name is Chris Daniels, and he loves movies. He adores movies. And he, you know, wants to make this zombie movie. And I connected with a local filmmaker.
Yeah.
And I just wanted him to meet a filmmaker. So, like, this will be good for him to meet a filmmaker, to talk craft and everything. And as we were walking out, we're getting ready to go, and Josh Adler's the director of the film. Josh said, you know, any questions? And Chris looked at him and said, how do we make a movie with people like us? They don't make movies with people like us.
Oh.
And if that doesn't just
yeah.
And what was heartbreaking about it was, like, he wasn't advocating.
No.
He wasn't. It was just matter of fact.
Yeah.
He was just stating, this is the world that I live in.
That's right.
And the world that I live in, they don't give us a chance to do this.
Yes.
So how am I going to do this?
Right.
And it kind of hit home. And Josh, the next day, called me. And he's like, I'm doing a documentary film. I'm coming to your job. We're doing a documentary film. So, yeah.
Is there going to be some zombies in there?
Yes. Oh, yes, there is. In fact, I was given permission, so if we have time after this, I do have, it's a rough draft of the first trailer of the documentary, so I'll definitely show it to you,
okay.
But so we're actually making like two movies at the same time right
that
now, so we have the zombie
awesome.
Flick,
yeah.
And the zombie flick, which is cool, as we were writing it, it serves as a metaphor for society in general. All the people with disabilities know that there are zombies in our building. All the neurotypical people won't believe them.
I love it. It's like they're superheroes.
Yes. So they're the ones that are warning us, and we're just, you know, we play Matt. We're like, that's inappropriate. Do not talk like that. That is ridiculous. We're going to have to talk to your case manager and all dialogue like that. And they're pleading with us. And then, you know, like, we wind up getting killed by zombies because we're not listening to them.
But I think that that's so important. Just representation, right?
Yes.
If You can see someone that looks like you, behaves like you, then you feel like you're not alone in this world. And you can look at someone and say, oh, wow, that's awesome. He's me, or she's me.
Right. Yeah. And the best comment I saw, I showed someone the trailer and she said to me, I didn't see any disabled people there. I saw a bunch of humans trying to make a movie.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was like, that's what we wanted to do. And we really spent a lot of time, like, we didn't want it to be this schmaltzy, feel sorry for people with disabilities kind of documentary. Like, we wanted it to be real. And yeah. we wanted to show real stuff. And there is real stuff in this picture. And so we have like the zombie picture that we're working on, and hopefully when that's done, at least we want to get it at least in a theater so we can do like a big movie premiere, because we really think that for them to see themselves on the big screen will like be like a top three moment in their entire life.
Of course.
And then once we get that done, then the documentary will be done, and hopefully that'll be out in 2024, and we'll start shopping into like film festivals and
that's
and
really
stuff like that.
You are doing really, really important work. I mean, that is tremendous.
Thank you. I'm trying.
Yeah.
But we need it. We need it, you know.
And you have to come up with creative ways for people to pay attention.
Yeah, well, I guess the screaming and yelling wasn't work, so it's like maybe if I make a zombie pick, people start listening to us, you know?
No, I think, but that's, we have to think outside of the box because, you know, it gets to be tiresome. It, you know, you're holding up that boulder every day going up that hill, and, you know, there are some days you wake up and you're just like, I don't want to do this anymore, you know? But if I don't do it, who's going to?
So you hit the nail on the head on like most mornings. You know? Yeah, there are a lot of mornings where it's like, oh my God, do I have? But yeah, who else is going to do it?
Yeah,
you know. And there are a lot of people in our field that feel like that. You know, there are a lot of people that are really working their tails off to get this done. I mean, you know, making the two movies at the same time. I mean, you know, we have John Miola is the supervisor of that team. Mark Grant and Ebony Hartwell are staff in that, and they have, you know, Ebony and Mark have an entire classroom of individuals to worry about while also trying to get this movie done and edited and everything. And that's a lot of what the documentary will show.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, you know, it's still, we're not filmmakers.
Right.
So we still have a job to do.
Yes.
While we're still trying to get this movie done and mm-hmm. made and edited and the documentary will show like the trials and tribulations of us getting the movie done while also illustrating the field as a backdrop. You know, looking at wages and looking at lack of funding and looking at, you know, all the film equipment we got. Like I did a ton of networking just getting donations because we don't have the funds to get any of this stuff.
How did you do that?
I've become really obnoxious. I've actually gotten really good. Like I ask as much as I can, like, you know, if someone, I mean, that's actually how it happened with Josh, our director. His wife posted on Facebook, have a bunch of old film equipment if anyone wants it. Mm-hmm. And I immediately messaged her and said what we are and what we're trying to do. And she was like, all right, yeah, you got it. Like, that's something we'd love to be a part of. Wow. And then she said, my husband's a filmmaker, so if he can do anything, I'm like, well, funny you should
that's
ask, because I'm going to ask him. But yeah, I did a lot of just asking, and our communications department has taken notice of a lot of what I'm doing, so they've actually helped a lot with networking. But, you know, I guess I've gotten to a point where if they say no, then it's going to be your loss.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
There's something special happening mm-hmm. here, and if you don't want to be a part of it, then...
Are there any places or different countries where people are treated better than they are here? Is it just New York? Are there other states doing it better? What do you think?
I don't know if there are any other states doing it better. I think it's, you know, unfortunately, it's pervasive. Countries, I'd have to actually do my research on that. I'm not 100% sure how different countries do it. But in all honesty, New York probably does it pretty good, which
really?
is sad. You know, it is a pervasive issue across the country. You know, could New York do things better? Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, you know, we went to Albany the beginning of this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the beginning of the year, advocating for an 8.5% cost of living adjustment, a COLA. You know, they came back with four.
Mm.
Four. So 8.5 and they gave us 4. That doesn't help much.
No.
You know? So it's again, trying to be that squeaky wheel. So things like that in New York, they can do better. But I do think New York probably does a lot of things pretty good. But again, we're not recognized. We're not that squeaky wheel. We're not getting the attention. You know, I wasn't happy with, I was optimistic with Hochul. And then when the 4% came back, I was like, and unfortunately, I think it's pervasive as far as like both parties. I don't get caught up when people argue back and forth. I'm like, unfortunately, I think collectively both parties don't really care about people with disabilities. Mm. I think there are individuals, absolutely, probably on both sides of the aisle that do care, but collectively, you know, I want, if anyone's listening and is going to mediate any debate, yes, ask the question. What's your stance on disability rights? What's your stance on salaries for workers with people with intellectual disabilities? Just someone ask the question. Mm. You know, the question's not, like, that's how bad it is, you know, that the question's not even asked. And I get it. Like, it's politics. Like, they'll circle around the question. I get, like, I don't know if we'll get a serious answer, but I'd love to hear the question get asked.
Yeah.
You know?
And how do people approach, I'm just, you know, how do people get into a facility like yours? What kind of red tape do you have to go through to get that done?
It's some red tape. It's not a lot of red tape.
Okay.
The biggest issue, honestly, in our field as far as that is the education system into the adult system.
Okay.
The transition's rough, and there has not been enough resources put in place to assist families in that adjustment. Mm-hmm. Because of the lack of funding in our field, in the adult services industry, we don't have the staffing.
Yes.
So you could have a child with an intellectual disability who goes through the education system.
Yeah.
And if you've seen classrooms, you'll have like two teacher's aides.
Yes.
Someone has a one-to-one. So like you literally could see a special ed classroom with 10 individuals and 5 staff people doing different roles.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen in the adult world.
Right.
And that's a culture shock for a lot of parents.
Yes.
That they're used to their kid getting one-on-one services.
Yep.
And they get into the adult world and it's 10 adults to 2 staff.
Yeah.
And it's a much different, and you know, like you're any human being, if someone sits with me and tells me step by step, like I am not mechanically inclined at all, but if a mechanic sat with me and whatever, repairing a carburetor, mm-hmm, and just sat with me and went step by step by step by step, I could probably follow each step and fix it.
Yeah.
That doesn't make me a mechanic, doesn't mean I'm good at it. He just talked me through. So when you have a child that has a one-to-one in the education system and they're doing things, unfortunately, the parents think they're at this higher level and they get into the adult world and they're not getting that one-on-one treatment.
Yeah.
And then in the adult world, we're forced to tell parents, sorry, but your kid's not as I don't want to say smart, but as they're not at the level that you thought they were.
Yeah.
And understandably, a lot of parents are like, you know, shook by that.
Yes.
And it's a nature of the beast. And I don't know what's to happen or where the services should be put in. Mm-hmm. But it's a big gap between educational child services and adult services. And there really should be something in the middle that,
yes,
really assists parents more effectively.
Yeah. I know a few moms that, you know, work their job but also have children that need assistance in their classroom. And it's like, they'll tell me that they have to go to every board meeting. They have to keep on it with the principal and the teachers. You know, and I think God bless them. But talking to you, I mean, they have to realize that their child is going to become an adult and the adult is going to need those types of services as well.
Yeah. And it's the nature, the squeaky wheel is like the nature of everything.
Yeah.
In our field. And there's so many stories. I'll tell you another story.
Yeah.
This is when I first started in the field and this guy I was working with, he was nonverbal in a wheelchair. Needed assistance with just about everything. His name is Jimmy. And I remember the first meeting I had with Jimmy's mom, and oh my God, I did not like her. Like, she was one of those really abrasive, And I remember distinctly in the meeting saying, like, Jimmy got angry. And she's like, my son does not get angry. I was like, oh, no. And I'm like straight out of college. Like, I'm trying to like navigate the, and I'm just, okay. Your kid doesn't get angry. He's upset. He's agitated. What should I say?
Yeah.
I'm like, she hates me. I don't really like her. And honestly, sadly, what happened, like, over, it was like the next year. And Jimmy started looking like really pale, and he didn't look right. He looked like he was sick. And we kept calling the residents, and they're like, he just got a cold. He's fine. And they kept sending him back in. And I'm like, he doesn't look right, though. We kept calling. They kept sending him back in. And then it was time for another meeting. And his mom was there, and his mom walked in, and she's like, he doesn't look right. And she took him. He had leukemia. And unfortunately, yeah, he passed away within the next couple months. And again, I'll never forget another, like, I'm sorry if I'm bringing this down.
No, but I want you to tell me these stories.
But the mom, like, grabbed me and hugged me and said, I'm so sorry Jimmy didn't get to work with you longer. Oh. And I was like, I'm thinking that she hates me. Oh. And she was just advocating.
Yes.
She was just being a fierce advocate.
These moms that I know, you don't want to mess with them, because they, and a lot of these moms are so great because they give me good advice in my advocacy. And it's like, you can't stop. You can't let anybody stop you. And I feel like that's, it lights a fire in you, and it can be taken for, forgive me, bitch, being a bitch, but there's motivation to that. It's because you are fighting for your child, and there, that can be sort of misconstrued sometimes.
Yeah. And cause you're not trained for it. You know, no one trained her in the art of debating when she had a child that was born with a disability. And, you know, I talk about rolling that boulder uphill. Like, you know, that child was born, and that mom, for better or worse, was told, all right, you have to start rolling that boulder.
Yes.
And from the moment that child was born, if you're a parent of a kid with a disability, like, you're rolling that boulder uphill, and everything is pushing against you. You know, again, when you see the stats on abuse, it's scary. It really is scary. And there is, it's time. It's 2023. We came out of the pandemic. We know the stats. We know what's happening. It's time to come out of this. It's time for every program to make a documentary or make your zombie film. You know, it's time for things to be better for people with disabilities. You know, it's just time.
Don't go anywhere. We'll have more of the Janice Dean podcast right after this.
You know, I mentioned before the entrepreneurialism group that I run at Tarrytown. Luce, Lavette, and Claire are three wonderful women that make crafts. They make jewelry. Lavette started making soaps, and that's all out of like our entrepreneurialism program. And they all, you know, Luce and Lavette have dreams of opening up their own store someday. Claire, she wants to make enough money to have egg drop soup once a week. So everyone has different definitions of success, but like, every program should have an entrepreneurialism program. Why are people with disabilities not being exposed to that?
Right.
You know, I'm not saying, and there's no shame in the world if your job in the community winds up being bagging groceries. I'm not throwing shade on that. But when it comes to people with disabilities, that should not be their only choice.
Yes.
If you choose to bag groceries, cool.
Right.
As long as we offered you 10 other different choices and you made the choice to bag groceries. But we're in 2023. We have things like Etsy. We have things like YouTube. We can teach people with disabilities to run their own podcasts. We have talk to text. If someone can't read or write, but they can talk, they can have a blog. They can get their words out there. We need to embrace technology more within the field. Mm. And we need the funding and resources to bring the technology in. We should not be doing the same things in Dayhab that we did 30 years ago. That's, I mean, for most of us in the world, we're not doing the same things we did 2 years ago.
Right.
Because tech keeps turning over.
Yeah.
If you're running the same activities with people with disabilities that you've been doing for 10, 20, 30 years, there's something wrong, and it's systemic.
Yeah.
And we can't get the funding. You know, a couple of years ago, we were able to get a grant where we brought some tech in, and it was wonderful just to see, you know, people with disabilities having a leg up Yes. You know, having the technology and watching them succeed. And, you know, Luce, one of our entrepreneurs, like, she got an iPad in the with the tech grant. And we're like, we should do like a commercial or something for your store. And she figured it out, and she taught herself how to edit it, and she put together a little video like promoting her store. And I'm like, these are the things, like, we don't know. There's disability, but we're not knowing the level of ability.
Yes.
Because we're not giving the resources.
That's exactly it. You know, and there's one thing, you know, with the whole nursing home advocacy that I've been doing, is I want to highlight the wonderful angels that do this. You know, there are amazing people.
Yes.
Like you said, it's a calling for them. And those people need to have a spotlight on them, because not everybody does this work. They truly, I feel like that it's like God, you know, gave them this something in their lives that made them want to do this.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, it's fine. I'm not terribly religious, but I believe there's something.
Yes.
I believe there's something. And yeah, I've had a lot of that lately, where, like, whether it's God or the universe or whatever it is kind of keeps saying, all right, you're on the right path. So just keep doing what you're doing, and keep putting one foot in front of the other. And even when it feels like an 8-ton boulder, you know, just keep pushing. Maybe you don't get as far up the hill today, but just keep pushing. And you're right. There are a lot of amazing people. And, you know, as much as we need the resources, there are amazing people out there that are pushing things forward. You know, there's a woman, Kim Kaczmarek, in Sleepy Hollow, who's opened up a coffee shop employed totally by people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've networked with them, and she's carrying our entrepreneur's jewelry in her store. One of the people with disabilities at Tarrytown is an amazing artist.
Wow.
So he's become their resident artist, and he sketches customers. So,
oh, I love it.
Yeah. So it's getting out there and networking and finding those like-minded people, because there are some amazing people, and there are people out there that really want to do good and are in the muck. So, like, for me as a curriculum supervisor, and I can get out and do things like this, and I keep telling people, like, I'm not done until I'm sitting in the Oval Office advocating for this.
Good
so
for
that
you.
That's my
yes.
So whether it's sitting in front of the governor or a microphone in front of me, in front of Congress, or in the Oval Office, like, I don't know if I'll get there, but I feel like if you put like a lofty goal in front, and that's the motivation. So I'm not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I appreciate you putting a microphone in front of me today and being able to say this. But yeah, I'm not satisfied till I get in the Oval Office. And my Josh is going to hate me when he listens to this. But I said to him, I was like, I'm in this movie with the idea of accepting the best Oscar for best documentary.
I
so
love it.
That's my motivation.
Yes.
We might not get there. But at least my motivation is
you're going
pushing.
For it.
Exactly. I'm going to go for it.
Right?
Whether it happens or not, like, we're going for
you
it.
You put it out into the universe.
Yes. He hates when I say it, though, because he is a filmmaker, and he's like, don't say that. But,
well, then I'll say it. You put it out there in the universe, because you never know if the universe is going to listen.
Yes.
And I think it does a lot of the time in subtle ways. And, you know, I know people here that might write down a question for a presidential candidate that has to do with folks that have disabilities.
I would very much appreciate that.
Because I think I have a few friends that might be able to help with that.
Thank you.
Because I want to hear the answer. Because I think all Americans need to hear the answer.
100%. I mean, that's like hitting the nail on the head. They need to. And it's just knowing that it's an issue that we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
and we're not going to let you off the hook.
That's right.
We're done. And getting to be out there and posture a bit and talk about it, it's, you know, sometimes I just hope with the networking I've done and people I've talked to and volunteers I've been able to bring in, and I create a really rich volunteerism program in the Hudson Valley. I'm just hoping that someone with money at some point decides, you know what, that guy doesn't have a good stance when it comes to people with disabilities. I'm not writing him a check. You know, because, I mean, that's where we start to get hurt, I think, when it's like, all right, yeah, people aren't going to support you with votes or financially if you don't have a stronger stance on disability rights.
Correct.
And it's, we kind of have to be a little bit obnoxious about that.
Yeah, because everyone knows someone or has someone in their family that deals with this. I mean, it's not foreign.
No, it's not. And when you start to really get into it, like, yeah, everyone has, you know, the amount of people I've talked to where it's, you know, oh yeah, I have a cousin with autism, yeah, or my friend has a daughter with cerebral palsy and,
yes,
you know, things like that. And, you know, being able to kind of get out there and talk about it, it's kind of like you were saying before, like the movie, like just seeing someone, oh, that's me.
That's
and
me.
Then that's like a, oh, I can do that because I just saw someone on the big screen doing it. Maybe I can do that. And you hopefully that eventually that 8-ton boulder starts rolling downhill.
That's right.
And we start seeing like the good stuff. And there's a lot of good stuff. There's really a lot of good stuff in the field. In fact, I'm planning on starting my own podcast, calling it The Good Stuff.
And good
just,
for you.
And just talking about the positive stuff,
yes,
in the field, because we have to talk about both. But sometimes we don't talk enough about the positive. And there is a lot of positive in working with people with disabilities. You know, is incredibly rewarding. I'm honored to work with the people I work with. I get emotional when I talk about them and what they've achieved, because every time as staff we put something in front of them to achieve, they always rise to the occasion.
Oh.
And that's a beautiful thing, and that's,
yeah,
that's a privilege to get to be a part of that. We just need government and funding to kind of fall in line and recognize the beauty and the wonderful work that direct service professionals do on a daily basis.
So to the person who's sitting and listening to this podcast and says, Ken, I want to help, how can they help?
Well, okay, the organization I work at is called YAI. So you can always look at yai.org and check out that website. My work email is kenneth.reedy@yai.org.
Okay.
Shoot me an email. Cause like I said, I don't care if you come to me and say, I'm a nuclear physicist, I want to volunteer, I'll bring you in. I don't care if like none of us understand, including myself, understand what you're talking about, but we'll get something out of it. Cause there are times even like there's this great market research firm, Behaviorally, in New Jersey. And I was able to set up a curriculum with them, learning about market research. And we set it up because I just keep saying yes. It's like, oh, you want to? Yeah, sure. Come on. You'll do something. And then I'm going there. I'm going to the offices. I'm like, what am I doing? I have a group of intellectual disabled adults. Like, going to a market research firm, is anyone going to understand anything? Am I going to understand anything?
Okay.
Like, and oh my, they were so good.
They
rose the occasion. Chris was there. Chris is like, because they do a lot of stuff with like labels and how labels,
yes,
attract. And he started asking all these wonderful questions about labels and colors and why this color. And Lavette wound up engaging in this financial conversation with the CFO. And I was just like, this is amazing.
That's
so
amazing.
So if you want to come and volunteer at YI, I don't care what your profession is. We will bring you in. Teach what you want to teach. Come in and just hang out with a group. Share your knowledge. Honestly, if you shoot me an email, the film, you know, Josh has been amazing, but he's been doing it gratis. He was so moved by the group that he's doing it for free. So if you're interested in getting involved in the film or would like to donate in any way, shape, or form to the film or to YI in general, again, you can contact YI or just shoot me an email.
How smart that the idea of the film. When do you think that's going to come out?
The zombie pick or the,
yeah,
doc?
Yeah, right. Well, both.
Okay, so the if it all works out.
Yes. We're putting it out to the
universe.
We're
putting it out to the universe. We're hoping that the zombie pick will be done before the end of the year.
Okay.
I have been told the edited trailer for the documentary will be done and ready to share virtually by the end of this month.
Okay.
So as long as the, now getting right to the, so if the zombie pick is done before the end of this year, we're hoping probably first half of 2024
okay.
that the documentary will be ready for release. And the plan then is just shop it to film festivals and get it out there. But I really think it's going to be a wonderful film. I was, again, I'll show you. Don't tell anybody, but I'll show you the trailer.
I'm excited.
But it's just, it's people, it's people driven.
Yeah.
And it's really a wonderful, it's unlike, and I've watched, you know, anytime there's someone with a disability in a movie, I'll watch it.
Yes.
It's unlike any, the feel you get from the documentary trailer is unlike anything I have felt before. And I'm really proud of it. And, you know, after watching the trailer, I think it's going to find an audience. I really do. I think it's going to find
too.
An audience.
And I'm going to help with that.
Thank you.
Ken Reedy, thank you for being here.
Oh,
and
thank
to
you
be
so
continued,
much.
Like I said, I've got some things up my sleeve.
That makes me happy.
Okay.
Because you get things done, so that's, I'm excited now.
I like new projects. All right. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Ken for joining me today for a very important discussion that left me wanting to help and advocate alongside of his mission. Despite the frustration and the tremendous hurdles he and others face when it comes to caring for the disabled, there are a lot of good things we can focus on and encourage. Ken says, just imagine what they could do with proper funding for materials and fair wages so that staff doesn't have to work two or three jobs or apply for government assistance. We need allies to help us in this fight, and if just one person hears this interview and decides to help, then that is a step in the right direction. Thank you to all of my listeners. If you have someone you think should make the Dean's List, let me know at Janice Dean on Twitter or Janice Dean FNC on Instagram. Or you can rate this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or at foxnewspodcast.com. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.